You're listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, an interview series podcast that highlights the stories of the top business professionals around the world. In each episode, we explore how entrepreneurs overcame blindness in business in order to execute their vision. Founder and Director of Strategy at Seer Interactive. He has worked across every vertical, including pharmaceuticals and hospital systems, to e-commerce and SaaS. With over 15 years experience doing and talking about search, he loves to speak at conferences about the future of search and tends to lead Seer to think about search through different lenses. Will started Seer Interactive in 2002 as a one-man operation out of his living room. Today, Seer is home to over 150 employees across Philadelphia and San Diego. In his free time, Will hangs out with his wife, Nora, sons, Rio and Nico, and pup, Coltrane. Some of the highlights of this episode was when we were talking to Will and just the natural responses that he was able to bring. I love how self-aware he is. I love how honest he is. And I love how understanding and how down-to-earth Will is. If you've never heard of Will, I'd highly recommend for you to watch his videos. I feel like his videos are more so what he's passionate about in that day and what's bothering him. But whenever he gets in front of a camera, it's pure gold. In this episode, he talks about a few failures that he's had and how much he loves his job. The one in particular is the $200,000 mistake. And that was probably in the third 75% to 60% within this episode. But the thing that I admire most about Will is how he's been able to accomplish all of these things without VC funding. Although he won't admit this, he did this all himself in the beginning. But as he developed an amazing team, how the company has developed, he's developed an amazing team that propelled Seer to the success it is today. Congratulations, Will. Thank you so much for being on the show. Check out today's episode. Today's episode is sponsored by Penji. Are you in charge of marketing for your business and need graphic design support? Let Penji design anything you need for your business, from a logo to your marketing materials, sales sheets, social media content, and so much more. Penji helps you achieve more with unlimited graphic design support, daily output, and a dedicated project manager, all at one flat monthly rate. We have an exclusive offer to the Blind Entrepreneur community. Head over to penji.co and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month. Again, that's penji.co, P-E-N-J-I.co, and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month of Penji. And now, let's get to today's episode. Will, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. So before we get into the episode, we have to lay the foundation as to why you're a qualified expert to talk about being the most, in my opinion, the most honest and the most transparent, quote unquote, associate or CEO on the planet. So why are you the most qualified and honest associate slash CEO on the planet?
You know what? It's not necessarily about me being qualified. It's that I'm less afraid of, I think what makes me qualified is I'm unafraid of having people see my warts. You know what I mean? And I think that that lack of fear enables me to be really transparent about things because, one, I don't really care what people think. I do, but I don't. Like, you know, it's like one of those things where I'm like, look, if people think this is a bad thing, I'm doing the best I can. So I think that I'm like very comfortable with sharing stuff that are tough. And I also am just sick of the rah-rah entrepreneurship thing. So I think that somebody needs to carry the torch of like, this shit sucks sometimes and this shit's hard and there's a lot of bad things that come from it too. And I just don't, like, who would you point to today? Like, who would you point to that you're like, nah, that person talks a lot about really tough shit. I don't know many people who do.
That's an interesting point. And to the people, like, do you feel as if like the level of respect is higher or less versus somebody who is actually talking about the real stuff versus somebody who's just talking about the nice cars, fancy clothes, girls, boys, et cetera, et cetera?
You know, I don't really think about what other people are doing. I just know that this is my truth, and I feel that not enough people are given a real peek into what it's like running a business and having some of the ups and downs. We have so many ups, but whenever I have a down, I'm a little bit excited about it because I'm like, great, I can talk to people about it. It's not all this just like great stuff that I post. There's also some really tough stuff too. And it's not even just like the cars and all that. I mean, it's just the like, you can go be an entrepreneur too. You can quit your job and you can be just like me. And now I make 6 figures a year. And it's like, no, the average person's going to try to start a business. They're going to fail. They're going to end up with a lot of debt and maybe divorce and a lot of other bad things that happen because they worked so hard and couldn't cut that off. And I'm like, who out there is talking about those kinds of things? Mm-hmm. So like I wrote a blog post about the one question I asked my wife that helped us to keep this whole crazy business thing in balance. And it's just like those kind of things I think that I don't see anybody really talking about that's considered an entrepreneur kind of speaker.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first question that I actually have for you is a perfect segue into what we're already discussing. And so if you were to describe business as somebody who is just starting out, what can you say to prepare that person for what's to come?
That's a big question.
we're starting off strong.
Assume you're going to fail. Don't go into too much debt. And balance out your inspiration with putting people around you who failed before, because they know what it feels like. Like if you, all you see is like me or Gary V and people like that talking, you're like, yo, I should start a business. Everybody I see is successful. And it's like, no, the only reason why you see all these successful people is because of survivorship bias. The people who fucked their lives up and went into debt and crushed things, like got crushed by starting a business, nobody wants to really give them any airtime.
Yeah. And that's just because it's not sexy, or just because people don't want to hear that type of story?
I think it's a little bit of both. One, it's not sexy. And two, people want to be inspired. They don't want to be told the reality.
Mm.
So if you want inspiration, in some ways, I'm the wrong motherfucker to ask, because I'm not trying to. If you look at all my videos and whatnot, like there's no video that you can find except for one or two where I'm presenting to an audience where I talked about entrepreneurship. Why? Because there's 1,000 people who want to get on stage and talk to you about how dope it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, the only way you're going to get me on stage to talk about entrepreneurship is usually to talk about shit that I did wrong.
Yeah. And that to me, and this is what sparked the conversation in the first place, is me watching videos, us grabbing coffee, having a conversation, telling you my problems, you giving advice, and then now here we are having this conversation. And that's, again, something that I incredibly admire about you. And while researching your history, it seems as if, and maybe it's just not on the research that I found, but you've only had one real job. Essentially, would you say that is that somewhat accurate?
Do you mean I've only worked in one company, or I've only had one real
job? Well, you tell me, because based off of my understanding in your mantra and your story is that you've had one core job, which is Sear Interactive, and you've been able to grow it from X to Y. But my question is, do you think that one job, did that help you or hurt you in the beginning of your career?
So I worked in an agency for 2 years. Then I worked in-house doing digital search marketing in another company for about 18 months. And then I started Sear. And that was after I did my student teaching, which was in between college and starting my career. I don't know. I think I always think that the working in-house for a little while, I think helped me to have a little bit more empathy for what some of our clients were going through and some of their struggles. So I think that helped a little bit. But I don't think that there was much that I did prior to Sear that really prepared me for Sear in terms of running the business. Obviously, there were things that I learned that helped me understand how to do search better, but not really anything that taught me about anything about how to run the business.
So when you're growing this business, and you're a relatively young guy when, and you're still young, but relatively even younger when you first started the business, was that, I guess, that age differentiation? And as you grew up into, like, I guess your adulthood was when running your business. So you had to have had some type of hurdles that you've had to overcome. Do you remember some of the initial things that, I guess, stunned the growth of the company or maybe even you, that maybe you overcame later on, and now here you are today being able to look back at that problem?
The biggest thing I would say is that I was just really naive. You know, I think sometimes you build your business and your vision around the things that you did not like about your old companies. And I just thought that if I was like wickedly transparent with salaries and all that stuff, that like people would work with me forever, right? And it sounds dumb to even come out of my mouth now, but at 25, I was like, yo, I think that people miss these things in the business. And I always want to find like 10 people and be a really small company and treat them like so fucking well, right? And I thought that that would make people want to stay with me forever. And I dealt with I think I took people leaving a little bit too hard on the early parts of my career. And I'm still friends with almost all those folks today. So it wasn't like I said anything mean to them. It was more like when I would go home by myself, I would beat myself up and say, what am I doing wrong? And are they ungrateful and all this stuff? And I realized like, nah, people change their minds about what they want to do. They change their minds about the organizations they want to do it in. And then I started focusing less on how do I say small and more like let's grow. And let's focus on the work we do while we're together. So then when we part ways, you can look back and be like, I had an impact on that company. I would much rather have somebody work at Seer for 2 years and have a massive impact on us than to work here for 6 and just kind of get stuck in the status quo of keep doing things the way we've always done them. Hmm.
You had a video about, I guess, the idea behind a charismatic leader. And you referenced that failure. Or I wouldn't even go into it being failure. It's just more so you having an open dialogue and conversation with your audience. But could you tell us a little bit about the charismatic leader? And I have a personal question is, do you think the charismatic leader was the charismatic leader from the beginning? And is that same charismatic leader, you know, there today?
I think so. I do. I think so. For me, the video that I did on the failure of charismatic leaders is quite simple. It's that we get excited about things and we can be very motivational. So we can be like, yo, there's this new thing. We're going to do it. It's going to be awesome. And that's very motivational to people. However, most of those folks are also not good at follow through. So I would get really dialed up about something and work on it for 2 or 3 months. And then slowly over time, instead of me updating the team every week, it'd be every other week and then once a month. And then it would just kind of fade off. And your team starts to learn like, oh, well, you get excited about shit, but do you really follow through on it? And, you know, the beauty of that is I needed people coming to me and also helping me to realize that sometimes when your company's growing, you're out there presenting and talking about these concepts, but you're not necessarily building the bridge back to your team to help them bridge from your concept to whatever. Now, I was recording videos for the team, being like, yo, click here, do this, do that. And I was thinking, like, everybody watches those videos and knows how to do it. And they don't watch your videos. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they don't know how to do it. And you're out there presenting and thinking that your team is doing this stuff because you recorded a video, you trained people, and you moved on. So the other thing I think is great is that in that, I had people who were brave enough to tell me, like, yo, people ain't doing the shit you're talking about, dude. And we need to build a bridge from this to that and have somebody own that because it's not going to be you. Mm-hmm. Having team members feel comfortable enough and safe enough to tell that to their CEO, I think it helps us to be in a really strong position because people feel like they can come to me and say those things.
Was that honesty, that conversation that you have with that example that you just gave of somebody coming up to the CEO, most people I would say in a corporate world are deathly afraid of their CEO and are deathly afraid of their manager. Can you, I guess, talk about the entire process of from 25 starting the business to now, that level of transparency, that level of interaction, was it always as real and down to earth as it is, as it was in the beginning, as it is today?
It can't be because, you know, like when I had my first 25 people, there were things I was able to do for people that showed them that I listened to them, right? Like little small things like, oh, you really like this player at Penn State. Cool. You crushed it this quarter. I'm getting you a signed autograph helmet from that player. Like I just can't kind of do that personally, but you know, I think I've built a company where, we actually store all of our employee likes that we hear. We ask our managers to do that. So if somebody ever does something, I'm able to go into our tool and pull that out. I'm also able to look at which managers are submitting likes the most to their team members and whatnot. So I can see which managers are living my spirit. And that to me has been a really interesting challenge is how do you go from what you can capture in your own mind and remember about people to make them feel special and heard and scale that to a larger organization and make sure that your managers understand that that's important. So I think I'm learning and finding ways to try to scale those things from the time when we were small that helped me to feel really personally connected to people. I also think, you know, this concept of the CEO being scary is fucking real. Mm-hmm. I know for me, I just got off stage. I was in London and I brought a couple of my guys with me to London for this presentation because they had been doing a great job. And they told me that night, they were like, yo, you crushed that shit and you're getting all these kudos. I'm telling you that maybe only 15% of our team members are doing that stuff right now because they haven't been told that they haven't managed the change management process. So here I was on this high, like all these people telling me how great I had done. And my team members brought me back down to earth. Appreciated that. You know, I try really hard to say hi to everybody when I can. So like I just, before I came down here, I stopped and said hi to one of our interns. I look for new faces I don't know. And I tell people all the time, like I may not, what's the word I'm looking for? I may not know your name yet. And if I don't, I'm going to keep asking until I try to remember it. Right. Like I just want people to feel valued.
Yeah. I mean, incredibly important. So was the, I'm really interested about that like program because that is really, that's a huge nugget. Was that, I guess how far into the growth were you able to develop that type of ideology of constantly knowing people's likes and kind of using that as a way to get to know your team better?
So I used to remember it all and store it myself. And then as we got bigger, we started, when people start, we start asking them like these 10 or 15 questions. Mm-hmm. So it helps us to get a little bit of a feel on what they're all about. So in that way, if they do something great, we can give them something that's more than just a monetary reward. We can show them that we listen to them. We know what their favorite restaurant is, et cetera. And really just came down to then setting the expectation for my team leads years after that. That's like, yo, I expect you to know something about your people. I expect you to fill this thing out because if they, if they crush it on something and I find out about it and I want to give them something that says like, we really understand you and there's nothing there. And all I got is to give them a cash bonus. Like you're failing me. Yeah. Because also my team leads have been around me so long that most of them can remember a time where I knew something about them and they can still recall how that probably made them feel that the CEO rewarded them with something. I said, I listened to you. I heard you say this thing when we were out over beers and I went and typed it up to make sure I never forgot it. And now when it comes time to give you a bonus, I'm able to also give you something that I know that you might see value in. And I'm like, how did you feel when I did that? I'm like, right. I need you to do that for your team. Otherwise you're not doing your job here.
So one of the things that I'm curious about and is near and dear to my heart is a level of traction and growth in sales. Was there ever an element without throughout your journey of entrepreneurship where you can pinpoint a particular time that you can recall specifically that says this was a moment or a trend that I saw within our business that's going to be able to take us from one employee, which is what you started with, to I don't even know now. Are you more than 200 at this point?
Around 200.
Yeah.
The company keeps surprising me. I just keep being surprised that we got here. I'm like, how the freak did we get here? And I never really set any overly aggressive goals for myself. I was always thankful for what I had and for how much we had grown. And I was not real good at being like, oh, like, here's a number. I mean, like, you know, at one point I wrote on one of my walls that I wanted to get to 2 million in sales. And then I was like, oh crap, we hit that. And then I was like, maybe someday I'll get to 5. And I was like, oh, I hit that. I was like, maybe someday we'll get to 10. And I was like, oh, got there. And then I just said, like, let me stop trying to aim for this number. And it's been very gradual, but I will tell you what's been really cool is it's been all referral based for the most part. Yeah. So what's really cool is like, that's my mental check, right? Like if we keep getting referrals with the clip we're getting, we must have done something right for that person, for them to want to bring us to the next company they work with, or for them to refer us deeper into their current company. So like, that's one of my checks on the, are we doing the right thing by our clients is, you know, you don't typically refer people you don't like. So, and referrals are a snowball. If you think about it, right? So if you work with 3 clients, and you do a great job for all 3. And then all 3 connect you over a year to 3 more people. And you do a great job for all 9. And all 9 of those connect you. So for us, it's like the more good work we do, the more new work we get.
And I'd like to expand on that a little bit more because Let's just face it. Your business, your style, your approach is to some degree an anomaly, because a lot of people don't put an emphasis on the referral. Can you tell us a little bit more about your process, your check marks that you have, I guess, systematically within the business to even ask for a referral? Because again, let's face that fact, people don't even ask for the referral. So just tell us a little bit more about your process in obtaining a referral.
So I didn't ask for them. You know, I just worked hard for people, like, and people feel that. And they feel that you're not like, and I didn't, you know, almost to a detriment, I was never like, that's going to cost you an extra 5 hours for this or that. You know, it was just like, I will help you. I will help solve your problem, period. Hmm. And I think people feel that. And it's so rare that people then are like, yo, this guy had my back. Like, he was really good. And they just can't help but talk about you. I've been horrible at asking for referrals. I've been great at doing good work and showing people that I cared. And I think that showing people you care and doing good work helped to lead us to people just being like, these guys are different. Like, they follow through on what they say. They're like, not full of shit. Now, does that mean that we occasionally don't hit goals for clients? Of course we don't sometimes. Does that mean that we don't make mistakes? Of course we make mistakes. But overall, people know we try to do the right thing, even in those times of making mistakes.
Yeah, that's big. There is a recent article, or at least a video that you did, that talked about the $200,000 mistake that you made, or the company made. So after meeting you, and again, just understanding your energy, it was interesting to see that particular style of transparency. But you talked about this mistake at the end of 2018. And can you tell us a little bit about the things that you learned from that mistake? And if you so choose and you want to, can you tell us what that mistake was?
Oh yeah. Well, we have a huge client who showed up with a bunch of money to spend at the end of the year. And we ended up overspending their account by $200,000. And you know, it's like, well, we just spent a bunch of money for your business, and we got to pay that back. Like, that's what I would want. So it's very, business is easier to do than people think. For me, everything is like, well, if that happened to me, what the freak would I want somebody to do on the other side? And if you just do that, it'll lead you to getting more referrals than you ever could believe. The hard part is that somehow we've made it very hard to do the right thing. You know, people spend all this time trying to figure out how they're going to spin it and all this shit. It's like, nah, dude, if you got the $200,000 to give back, give it the fuck back. Like, mm-hmm. You spent that client's money. They trusted you with it. How can you go to sleep at night trying to find some way to be like, oh, well, it wasn't my fault or whatever? Like, all that's a waste of time. And that's how you get referrals, because that client is huge. And you can guarantee they know other people. And their story about Sierra will be like, you know what? Even when we had already told them they were leaving, so they had no incentive to really kind of pay all that back immediately. They could have stretched us out over time, paid us slowly, because we were leaving. So there was no incentive for Sierra to kind of keep the relationship strong. And we just, yep, $200,000 check, boom, yep, here you go. Like, sucks for me, right? But that's what I wish somebody did for me if they had it in the bank. Don't mm-hmm. stretch me out, man. Like, if you got it, sorry that you're going to have a tougher fucking month or two or three. Sorry that you can't do certain things you want to do, but that was my money that you spent. So I think it's just easy to think about what do I wish somebody to do for me? And then I just do that.
And I thought what was really interesting about the video was your first reaction to, well, not your reaction, but the common reaction would be to fire people. But instead you did something completely different than fire them. You were on the complete opposite end of the spectrum. Can you talk a little bit about what you did instead of what, I guess, most businesses, owners, CEOs would do in that situation?
Well, I mean, let's think about it, right? I got a team of 200 people, of which very few are connected to this issue. So if I fire somebody over this, I have taken the person who is most connected to the issue, knows exactly how it happened. As long as they show real remorse and real effort to try to fix it, like, they care more about fixing this problem. Mm-hmm. They know how bad they felt having to talk to the executive team and be like, oh shit, like, this is what happened. Like they probably never want one of their coworkers to ever feel that way. So what you do if you fire somebody like that is you are taking a person who is most invested and getting rid of them, which means the people you asked to help you plug that hole and fix that problem, they never really felt the pain because they're not the one that woke up one day and went, oh my God, is that really 200? Is that, oh my God, that number is 200,000? Oh my God. Like you want that person on your side because they're just more like, I will fix this for you. I am so sorry. I will fix this for you. Someone else you bring in is like, yo, I heard you lost $200,000. Yeah, I'll help you on nights and weekends when I can, but I ain't lose it for you. I followed the process or whatever. It didn't happen to me. So I think one of the lessons learned is that, you know, if a person's truly remorseful, they're more interested in solving this problem than anybody else in your company usually.
Yeah. To switch gears a little bit about less about business and more so about mindset. Again, something else that you're incredibly passionate about is the idea behind work and life and balance. And I was reading the article about your definition of what work and life balance is. And I smiled when I saw this elaborate graph that I guess had a breakdown of every single thing that you do. I don't even know what the graph is, but I was curious to hear, like, have you always been this type of numerical graph oriented person that kind of just tracks everything when it comes to business and life?
I think my desire to track where my time is spent has come from my understanding of recency bias and the fact that in times of stress, you'll grasp onto what happened in the last 2 or 3 weeks, what you can remember. And that might not actually be the real symptom. And at that moment, you're like, well, I wasn't tracking all my data. So therefore, I don't know what was leading up to what led to this issue. Numbers don't lie, man. Like, I think I've always been the kind of guy, I like numbers in my business. Like I like knowing where I ranked, right? And I liked knowing that I could improve that ranking or improve that number if I changed things. So for me, I don't know how to play a game that doesn't give me par in a scoreboard, right? Like I need to know what am I, like what, like, okay, so if it's a par five and I get 18 strokes, like, all right, good. I know I sucked. What I don't like is that ambiguity over like, am I doing a good job or not? So I like things that have numbers, and I also don't have a low tolerance for like bullshit and making numbers up and being like, oh, I think this, and I understand recency bias. And I think those things have always led me to tracking my data in a way that if I ever have a question about how I deploy my time, where I spend my time, am I spending enough time with my kids and blah, 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 that I can quickly look at like, no, this might have been a bad month, but overall, well, you've been good at this versus like, I'm the worst dad ever because in the last 3 days or last 3 weeks, I didn't make it home to give my kids a bath.
When you were, as you're growing the company and as you're continuing to use data, I've even seen some tweets most recently about the your views on economics and things like that. Has graphs and has numbers and looking at the numbers and studying the numbers, has that been a core, derivative of the success that you were able to obtain from growing the business?
Nope. I think everything that's made this company successful is what's in my heart. And it's that I care about helping my team to be successful and helping my clients to be successful and having an impact in my community. Like, everything else comes from that, right? I care about being a good dad, so therefore I had to get data, yeah, right? Because I didn't want to just wake up and be like, am I being a good dad or not, right? Like, you know, and that's where you just start feeling guilt. Like, oh, you know, well, last week I traveled a lot. Well, if you haven't traveled that much in 6 months, like, is that the dad you want to be? Yes or no is up to you. But what you want to know is you want to have that data at your fingertips to be able to keep yourself from like spiraling into a like, you know, and like, let me give you a great example. I don't know if it's a great example, but we'll see how it goes. So my wife is really against us putting our dog in the cargo hull of a plane. She's like, I don't want to put the dog underneath the plane. Fine. So I just drove to San Diego and drove back because we just spent 3 months in San Diego at my West Coast office. And like, she and the kids flew and I drove all the way across country and back because I had to drive with the dog. And to me, I was like, all right, sweetie, let's look at the data, right? My wife's got a PhD, so it's not like she knows her way around a ton of data. But yeah, like I don't like to, like so for me, like I like to take emotion out of decisions, which means if I can get the data, it helps me to be a little bit more clear-minded. And I'm an emotional guy, so I think knowing I'm super emotional, I try to bring the data in. So I said to my wife, I was like, look, like I think we know that I'm more likely to die on the, like data says that I'm more likely to die in a car accident. I'm about to drive 3,000 miles across the freaking country and back, which is a higher likelihood of that. I am in the middle of my life, right? According to average life expectancy, I'm in the middle, right? I'm at 42. Most people probably live to fucking 80 or whatever, right? And you're like, okay, so I'm in the middle of my life. My dog is almost 12 and a half or 13 years old. She's at the end of her life. And we don't put her on a plane. So then I looked at how many dogs die in cargo holds. And you're like, the percentage likelihood of me dying driving this dog who's at the end of their life all the way across the country and back is significantly higher than her likelihood of dying at the end of her life on a plane. And it's like, my wife was like, whatever, dude. Like, she's like, my wife was more like, I don't want to think about that. She's like, I don't want to think about that. Whereas I like to think about things that way because it keeps me from acting so emotionally because I'm a very emotional person. So I find that looking at data and numbers helps me to put a governor on the way that I sometimes just naturally think and operate.
How can you, how do you even present that data? I mean, let's be honest. The biggest board meeting you'll ever have is probably one with your significant other. So how are you able to present? And again, you don't have to give me the personal details, but I just want to understand the, how are you able to collect the data, the tool that you potentially be, that you're using in order to do this, in order to figure it all out.
Well, for that conversation, I just Googled a bunch of shit, right?
but on your blog, there is like a graph that was really detailed.
Well, and I present that to my wife. It's like, you might not want to hear this, but like the data shows that, like, I don't think what you ultimately want is for me to be alive. I think if you value my being alive more than our dog, then like you are asking me to do something that conflicts, that the data conflicts with what you asked for. And it's okay if you're like, I just feel that way. Great. But you need to realize that you're not making this decision off of a place of data. You're making it off a place of emotion, which is fine, right? I'll drive really safe. but when I look at how I spend my time, you know, I look at things, I export my calendar. So the calendar's already formatted. And then I create some rules to help me understand how many times am I traveling? Where am I flying? How many nights was I gone away from the kids? How many times was I with my wife on that trip? So like I start to just structure my data in a way that helps me to understand, like, am I being the kind of father and the husband that I want to be? I do not want to be the kind of husband that's gone all the time. I don't want my wife to be like, yo, like, where were you? You know, and usually what happens is people can't really figure out what the trigger is until it's too late. So all of a sudden, one month you're gone for 12 days and your wife's like, yo, you ain't even been here. And you're like, I never knew that 12 days was a problem. So I'm really good at being like, all right, what's something that I see that I really like and get excited about that could really kind of take over too much of my life? I know who I want to be. Good dad, good husband comes before all the other things. Because of that, I go, where do I need to cut those things off? Or how do I track my data to make sure that I don't wake up one day and end up being the dad or husband that I didn't want to be.
What does that balance look like to you? Can you define what work life and balance is exactly?
So for me, you know, if I work probably 55 hours in a week, it's usually a good number for me. I can work less. Sometimes I work more, but I know that anything above 55, 60, I start being like I'm probably not home for the kids in all the way that I would want to be. Then there's how many days in a month am I gone from the family where they couldn't travel with me. So for a long time, my family's been able to travel with me. So it's been easy to be like, yep, I'm under. So then I track how many days I am away from the family. And that's another way that I kind of track how I'm doing. Am I even there, you know, to be a good dad? I mean, being there is the beginning step, and then being active and being present and being involved is the other step.
Is it relatively easy for you to turn that switch off from CEO cap to dad to husband, et cetera?
I don't know. I mean, I've come home a lot of times because my office is so close to the house that there were times early on when I would come home and I'd be talking to Nora, and Nora's like, you were talking to me in CEO voice, like ikshnay. And I was like, understood. Because even the way I talk about the way I presented that to my wife, it was very like cut and dry, like, yo, like, it's okay, but like the data is not proving out what you just said, right? And sometimes she's like, yo, don't, nope, don't be bringing that CEO voice to me. So I think I've learned how to manage that balance of not coming home all like, you know, in that mode. Rarely do I come home. I get home late enough that it's like usually like, yep, kids have just either just eaten dinner, or I can be with them while they eat dinner, and then it's bath, and then it's nighttime. So like, it's not like I'm there from like 3 to 7, and I'm checking my email in between. Sometimes I do, like, whatever, man. I'm not one of those people that's like beats myself up over the fact that sometimes I check email, like when I'm hanging out with my kids. Like, that's not for me. That's not what I'm going to be hard on myself about when it comes to me raising my kids.
Yeah. And that's a good mindset to have. And it's a healthy one at that. And it obviously transpires throughout your career and your mentality. I just have a couple more questions, if that's okay with you. And one of them involves another video that I watched. Again, I'm not a stalker or crazy fan. I just really like research, and I really like understanding the core of a person. And you made a video, a confessional actually, about not selling the company. And the one thing, and one of the reasons why you chose not to, was because you wanted to fight for something that was right. And you wanted to fight for transparency. Can you tell us a little bit more about why you decided not to sell the company, and I guess your personal beliefs within that decision?
Sure. There's a couple of things. So one, I still really love my job. Like, it's just too much fun. And I'm not a good long-term thinker. So, you know, I like to, so I need the flexibility to be able to be like, oh, I didn't think about this before, but now that I have thought about it, I need to be able to do it, because otherwise I walk around with guilt feeling like I didn't do the right thing. And I found that I'm enjoying work too much to have somebody be like, oh, Will, you want to do this thing for your team members? Well, you didn't negotiate that on the way in, so we didn't know you wanted that. So now, sorry. You know, that doesn't really work for me, at this juncture of my life. I also feel there's, if I can hang on and keep going, there's a lot of other people who have been with me for a long time who I think I can also help to have a really good exit as well. Whereas right now it'd be a good exit for me and maybe one, maybe two other people. I think I can kind of spread that to some other folks who've been with me for a long time. So I'm trying to also find ways to redistribute that wealth and get more people into like our phantom equity plan and whatnot. So if I have a bigger exit than I currently would have had, or I would have had a year and a half ago, that there's more for me to provide out to team members, because I don't really need over a certain number if I were to sell the business, but yet I'm really into growing it. So that means that as that delta gets bigger, that's just more that I'm going to find a way to distribute to the company. And, you know, I want to distribute it out and have some other people be in a really good position too. Be able to say my kids' college is paid off, just paid off my mortgage. So now when they go to get their next job, they can pretty much not have it be all about how much they make, and they can go somewhere that maybe speaks to their heart a little bit more, but maybe pays them a little bit less, because by being at Sierra and riding out with us for 10 years or whatever they did, that they got a chunk that helps them to know that, oh my God, my kids' college is paid off and my mortgage is paid off. Like, wow. Like, by working with Will and sticking it out with him, for me to be able to sit around a barbecue someday and see 20 people whose lives were altered by them choosing to stay with Sear for the long haul, where a lot of worry and stress is just gone because they stayed with us, that would make me feel really fulfilled. And then as it relates to the, you know, the different things related to culturally about not selling, is like, you know, for me, I look at a company's like maternity and paternity leave policy, and that tells me a lot about who they are, right? And when I was in the conversations with this one company, like, it wasn't equal, you know, it wasn't the same. And now there was a time at which it wasn't equal for Sear, because I wasn't educated. But what I realized is my company was too small in this larger company to be able to affect change. So if the company wanted to acquire Sierra, to be like, yo, you guys are onto something. Because we've been out there trying to knock on doors and sell into the companies that just showed up at your front door. There's something about your culture and whatnot and the way you guys are getting referrals that we have teams of 5 and 6 and 7 salespeople to go get us into the same businesses you're getting into. There's something going on there. We want to learn some things from you. That would have been different. But I was too small to affect change. So therefore, I would imagine that, like, how could I look at you if you work with me today? Mm-hmm. And today, as a father, you have a child and you can take up to 12 weeks and then I sell and then you have your second child and you're like, what do you mean I get 6 weeks or 4 weeks? What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And then it's like, Will's a fucking sellout, right? Mm. So for me, I just couldn't look at people in the eye and not have, if I had had more levers to pull, I might have been able to do something back when I got that offer. But you know, we grew 30% last year, so it worked out that I didn't.
Hell yeah. Well, congratulations to you. And my final question is something that's near and dear to both of our hearts, actually, which is helping those who help others. And in addition to all of these stories, I can say to the people that are listening, I can confidently say that this, your mentality isn't something that is, was done overnight. This was kind of ingrained to you in the very beginning of your life and what it seems definitely your career. I'm almost going to assume your life as well. And that's you giving back. You've gone through, you've been volunteering with the Covenant House for almost 20 years. You've been doing Ronald McDonald House for, as a chef for numerous years as well. What is it about giving back that means so much to you?
It's selfish. It keeps me from being wrapped up in all my CEO, SEO bullshit, right? Like, you know, my first volunteer assignment that I did post-college was I started volunteering at the Children's Hospital. And at the time, I was really like not in a good place in my career when I was working for this one company. I was very like complainy and I was really unhappy. And then when you go to the Covenant, or not, when you go to CHOP, you know, I was going there on Wednesdays playing with sick kids from 6 to 9, and you see these kids who have been in the hospital for their whole first year of life, and you see their parents trying to figure out how to manage shit. I was like, you know what? Like, maybe all this stuff I'm so frustrated about in my career ain't really that big of a fucking deal, right? And I feel that volunteering and spending real time with people going through real shit has helped me to keep my life in perspective so that I don't think that my rough days are that bad. Even when I got to write a $200,000 check back to a client, I think a lot of people would go home, fuck, you know, blah, blah. I went home like, everybody I walked by today would probably trade places with me, right? Like I could afford to cut somebody back a check for $200,000 instantaneously based off of a mistake that I made, which means I obviously had more than that sitting around. Like, so I could walk around and be like, oh, that's fucked up. And, oh, you know, how do these people mess this up? Or I could be like, you know what? There's a lot of people who would trade places with my position right now. And I think that volunteering with real people and understanding what real people are going through and their struggles helps to keep me grounded so that I don't spend all my time hanging out with entrepreneurs and shit who all day, all they're thinking about and talking about is crushing it and hitting the next goal and all that. And as great as that is, I think that I personally really like having another outlet to work towards.
Very good. Well, I just wanted to say thank you so much for being on the show today. If people that are listening, if they could go ahead and follow you, or if they could be a part of your continued journey to success, where can people find you and get in contact with you?
Easiest thing to do is follow me on Twitter. I'm spending less and less time on other social channels. So I would say Twitter is probably the best place to hit me up. And if you do, I'll always be willing to help you out however I can. My mantra is never be a roadblock. So I always want to be somebody who enables others. So if you hit me up, even if I can't help you, I will try to find somebody who can, or I will get back to you to the best that I can.
And he is an absolute man of his word. And I could speak to it from our conversation of coffee to here we are today. Greatly, greatly appreciative of your time. And all the links will be in the show notes. So if you want to get in contact with Will, you can go ahead and follow him on Twitter. And the link is in the show notes below. And again, Will, thank you again so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
You've been listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, brought to you by Penji. Our guest this week was Will Reynolds from Seer Interactive. Okay, listeners, I am sending a worldwide challenge this week. I'd like you to do something for yourself. Go out to a nice restaurant, order something fancy or greasy, whatever it is that you're feeling, but whatever it is, just make sure it's something that scratches your itch. Get out the house, go for a walk, take a different route to work, whatever it is that you have to do, do something for yourself. You deserve it. You've been working incredibly hard, treat yourself. And when you do, tweet me at GrisbowskiJ or head over to tbeshow.com and drop a comment on this week's episode. You can learn more about Will, and primarily the two channels that I would recommend are his Twitter handle, which is at Will Reynolds. It's WILREYNOLDS. Or you could just go ahead and search for him on YouTube, Will Reynolds. As for us here, you can check Penji out at penji.co if you need a fast, simple, and affordable graphic design solution for your business. And lastly, head over to our podcast website, which is tbeshow.com, for more interviews just like this one. You could also hear one of, although we didn't talk about it, you could also hear Will's good friend, Rand Fishkind. They kind of have a bro relationship, a brother relationship, and it's quite awesome to see. So you could watch that one, listen to that one, and this one after the other. And lastly, if you've enjoyed this episode, it would mean the absolute world to me if you could share this episode with a friend. It's the only way that we can cure blindness in business. Go out there and execute your vision, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.